Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, February 21st, 2017. President Salva Kiir vows that aid agencies will have unimpeded access to starving South Sudanese.
The government will ensure that all humanitarian and development organizations have unimpeded access to the needy populations across the country.
And ceasefire monitors say they are being denied access to certain areas of South Sudan.
We just need time to neutralize the threat which is still around for them to go. It was also meant for their own safety and security.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. As we reported yesterday, three United Nations agencies have declared famine in parts of South Sudan. They say the famine is man-made, caused by the conflict that began in 2013 between government and rebel forces. The fighting and the current economic crisis have left 100,000 people facing starvation, especially in Unity State. Today, President Salva Kiir promised aid agencies will have unhindered access to hunger-stricken South Sudanese, especially women and children who seem to be suffering the most.
The government will ensure that all humanitarian and development organizations have unimpeded access to the needy populations across the country.
This is not the first time President Kiir is promising aid agencies unhindered access. Eugene Owusu is the United Nations Humanitarian Coordinator in South Sudan. He says insecurity has made it impossible for aid workers to deliver assistance to remote areas of the country.
I would like to use this opportunity to call on government, the warring parties and all actors to support humanitarians, to provide the necessary access so we can continue to bring life-saving services to those in need and also provide an opportunity for those in need to live a life of dignity.
President Kiir says his government will also help farmers struggling in the country.
The government is aware of the failure of crops last year in the region, and so steps are being taken to mitigate a potential famine in that area. Towards this end, the government will increase the supply of basic food commodities in the area with the provision for subsidized prices.
The UN agencies report that about 5 million people, nearly half of the country's population, are severely food insecure because of the fighting, drought and hyperinflation. Pierre Vautier is the deputy country representative of UN's Food and Agriculture Organization in South Sudan. He warns that the situation needs urgent attention.
We need to scale up and widespread the assistance in the coming months. We don't want to have the situation worsening and deteriorating again. If nothing is done, the situation, half of the population is going to be directly at risk of malnutrition and food insecurity and, of course, excess of death rates.
Isaiah Chol Arwai is the chairperson of the South Sudan's National Bureau of Statistics. He acknowledges that food security has deteriorated across South Sudan.
The long-term effects of the conflict coupled with high food prices, economic crisis, low agricultural production, and depleted livelihood options are all contributing to the deterioration of the food security situation.
The UN agencies say urgent action is needed in order to prevent more people from dying. Also today, President Salva Kiir called on lawmakers to support the national dialogue, which he calls one of his government's top priorities. In his State of the Nation address to reopen Parliament, Mr. Kiir said the dialogue, which he initiated last year, will help restore peace across the country. Waki Simon Wudu has the details for VOA from Juba.
After a two-month recess, President Kiir opened the second session of the Transitional National Legislative Assembly by talking about a national dialogue he says will get underway in early March.
I want to firmly emphasize in this August House that the national dialogue is a key priority for this government and an important national undertaking designed to unite the people of South Sudan and to consolidate peace and improve security in the country.
Mr. Kir says the government must also implement the 2015 peace agreement, revive the country's devastated economy, and repair relations with the international community, which he acknowledged have not been good during the last 3 years as the conflict drags on. But the president insists the national dialogue will foster peace and is not a scheme to delay real political change.
The national dialogue initiative we have rolled out is not a trick, a delaying tactic or a calculated strategy by the government to consolidate its grip on power, as anti-peace elements always claim. We are not in the business of playing tactics or tricks. We are a government and our business is to work for the unity of the people of South Sudan, protect the sovereignty and territorial integrity of this land, and to uphold our constitution and international obligations.
Civil society activists, church leaders, and others have said that any national dialogue must include members of both the AMTI and an AMTI opposition, some of whom live outside the country. Critics also question the logic behind Mr. Kir's decision to assume a leadership role of the national dialogue. President Kir says he will welcome input from all corners into the process.
To ensure that the process achieves its stated objectives, the national dialogue is not written in stone. It is designed as a great flexibility, and so we are open to any inputs and suggestions to improve it and accommodate any concerns that may surface.
President Kir says an economic team of his will soon roll out a new policy to rescue the country's economy and address the depreciating value of the national currency. And the president says he has instructed the Ministry of Petroleum to reopen oil fields in former Unity State to increase oil production and boost government revenues. On South Sudan's precarious security situation, Mr. Kir had this to say.
The government takes security very seriously, and in order to achieve the goal of making 2017 a year of peace, stabilization of the security situation will take precedence. The government will pursue peace through the national dialogue and take extreme measures to neutralize anti-peace elements anywhere.
Mr. Kir says security cameras will be installed across the capital, Juba. Before wrapping up his speech, the president complained that former United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon did not treat his administration fairly.
We were treated with contempt and largely bullied, and we hope this treatment will be put to an end and a new course is charted where this republic is treated as equal member in the community of the nations.
The international community has been frustrated with the South Sudan's political leadership inability or unwillingness to end the country's long civil war, saying they are not willing to put their people first. Wake Simon Wodo, VOA News, Juba.
The Ceasefire and Transitional Security Arrangement Monitoring Mechanism, or CITISAM, the body responsible for monitoring South Sudan's permanent ceasefire and security arrangements, says the South Sudan Army is preventing its officials from visiting the Wau Shuluk in the former Upper Nile state, where fighting continues between government and rebel forces. The SPLA's spokesman says the monitors were blocked from entering Wau Shuluk because the area is not safe. Tito Justin has more for VOA from Juba.
The monitoring team is supposed to check for ceasefire violations per the 2015 peace agreement. 3 weeks ago, the team tried to verify allegations of violations of the permanent ceasefire and transitional security arrangement in the corridor between Malkar and Reng, but was denied access. Even the Joint Monitoring Commission approved its request. After a mortar attack on Wau Shuluk February 10th, the monitoring body's patrol was delayed for 6 days. But when the peace monitors tried to move into Wau Shuluk on the 16th, military officials at the SPLA 2nd Division blocked them from accessing the area. SPLA spokesman Brigadier General Lul Rai Kong says that's because it wasn't safe.
It was an advice to them that the secure situation was still not conducive enough for them to conduct foot patrols.
because we still have the enemy around, and the area commander said their presence on the ground was going to compromise in enhancement of the security situation.
Kong says the ceasefire monitors should give the government forces more time to stabilize the security situation before they conduct their fact-finding tour.
We just need time to neutralize the threat which is still around for them to go. It was also meant for their own safety and security. You know, they are visiting area which is under control, and we want them to visit the area when we are sure that nothing will harm them, especially now that we have hostile elements still very close to the area.
The Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission declined to comment on reports that the monitoring and verification teams were recently denied access to Wau Siluk. We reached out to CITSAM's communication officer Ruth Feni for comment several times as well. She did not answer her phone. In yesterday's written statement, CITSAM condemned the denial of freedom of movement for its monitoring and verification teams. Again, Brigadier General Kong.
What we are doing, this great work, it is all that they should also be listening to our side of the story, especially in regard to developing security situation, the evolving security situation, today's unpredictable security situation.
CITSAM is calling on lawmakers in the transitional government of national unity to intervene so its team can reach Wau Siluk. This is not the first time the ceasefire monitors have reported being denied access to conflict-affected areas. Last year, monitoring teams were repeatedly denied access by government troops in Yei and former Eastern Equatorial State. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
Leaders from Catholic Church in Uganda, Kenya, Ethiopia and South Sudan say they are working to promote peaceful coexistence among pastoralist communities living along the three countries. The leaders are holding a four-day cross-border conference in Lodwar, northern Kenya. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the story for VOA from Lodwar.
For decades, the nomadic pastoralist communities of Toposa in South Sudan, Karamoja in Uganda, Turkana in Kenya, and the Nyangatom have engaged in border disputes over grazing land and limited water resources for their animals. Catholic leaders from the dioceses of the four countries say ensuring peaceful coexistence among the border communities will not only bring peace to the region, but will help heal past wounds caused by the conflict. Bishop Dominic Kimengit of Lodwar Diocese in Kenya says despite their difficulties in dealing with the pastoralist communities, the Catholic Church is not giving up.
Now we are all here. What can we do, especially in regard to issues of conflict around our region? Because we're experiencing a lot of conflicts. From the perspective of the Diocese of Lodwar, it's like we had problems with the people of Karamoja, and then people of the Toposa people of South Sudan, and then the Nyangatom people of Ethiopia, and then the Dasanet people also of Ethiopia. And then on the Kenyan side, the Pokot. Especially around that time, the conflict was really serious. Like, almost every day, you are receiving reports, the Pokot have raided this side of the diocese of Lodwar. You know, five people have been killed, 300 animals taken.
Catholic leaders first started a cross-border peace initiative for the pastoralist communities 4 years ago. Peace was holding for the most part among pastoralists for nearly 2 years. But late last year, Kimengit says, fighting flared up between the Turkana of Kenya and the pastoralist communities of Ethiopia.
We enjoyed peace, especially along the corridor between the Pokot and the Turkana. For almost 2 years, the conflict sort of subsided, and we really enjoyed peace for some time. And even people from Pokot would come, especially to our border areas like Kainuk, and they would come there, do business. There is a market there, and they bring their cows and goats, and it was wonderful. But then, come December last year, again the conflict erupted.
Joseph Pilipi, Bishop of Kotido Diocese in Uganda, agrees.
The past years, when there were plenty of raids, plenty of conflicts, people from GM and for the those going out, even into Sudan, even down here among the Turkana. Now we are really in peace. Now with peace, what is my identity? I am good for nothing. I cannot go to war. I cannot go to steal. I cannot kill anybody. So I am good for nothing. So there is this period of time. It is a period of a great crisis for the warrior. And we need to find a way of giving them an alternative identity. And that is a very big challenge for the church.
In South Sudan, the Toposa and the Turkana, along with the Karamoja in Uganda, are still at peace. They share water points for their animals and have a common border market. Simon Lumuria, a youth from the Toposa area in South Sudan, says the cross-border peace initiative gives him hope that pastoralist communities will be able to forget their long traditional conflict.
The Turkana Toposa's Sin Peace Conference was being conducted here. We carried out the exercise along the border of Nadapal and Losoila side. All Toposas have been sharing together with the Turkana the same wealth, which is near Nadapal. I mean to say that's a borehole. Because we have four borehole, the Turkanas, they drink at daytime. Toposa drink night time.
Johannes Gugala, a team leader for Sodo Diocese in Ethiopia, says the church should help build up centers like boarding schools in border communities where children can come together and learn a new lifestyle.
We need the government cooperation. What also I was telling you, the one was succeed because of the government cooperation. So with this government of this side, they are saying that now a time they are in preparation for election. So maybe it is difficult, but say it. And our plan is, and our wish is to build a common education center. Then with that, we may hope slowly we can succeed.
For the past 2 years in Uganda, the government has forcefully disarmed Karimojang pastoralists, leading to relative calm in the area. The youth in Karimoja region now try to adapt other means to earn a living, like cracking stones rather than raiding activities. In South Sudan, little efforts has been made to disarm pastoralist communities of Toposa, Boya, Didinga, and the Lango bordering Karimoja. Father Arcangelo Lokoro, who is the Vicar General of the Catholic Diocese of Turit, says having peace along the border is critical for the pastoralist communities. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Lodwa, Northern Kenya.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese civil servants get a helping hand from their counterparts in the neighboring countries. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think healthcare should be free?
Yes, I think so, because if it is free, everybody will go to the hospital when he or she is sick. But because of money, some people will be sick and they will still be in the house.
People will have to go to hospital, but because of unemployment, they can't pay for the hospital bills. So I think it must be free.
I do not think healthcare should entirely be free, no. But certain levels of healthcare, like the basic level of checkups, doing checkups, that can be free. The rest can be taken care of by the individual.
I think healthcare should be free because that is one of the social responsibilities of governments.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's our time for health segment. And today we are talking about malaria. Mosquitoes carrying the malaria parasite prefer to feed on people already infected with the disease. What is more, they will drink a lot more blood from infected people. VOA's Joe DiCapua tells why.
When people exhale, they release carbon dioxide. And if they're infected with the malaria parasite, they'll release a lot more of the gas. Mosquitoes are attracted to carbon dioxide. They smell it, and the stronger the smell, the better. For them, anyway. Stockholm University Professor Emeritus Ingrid Fye says the malaria parasite produces a molecule called HMBPP. It stimulates red blood cells to release more carbon dioxide. She says in a lab experiment, her colleague took some infected blood and watched how mosquitoes reacted to it.
My collaborator, Nushin Emami, said, okay, I see the mosquitoes, they are very quick in feeding on this blood, HMBPP. So maybe it has some special effect on their behavior.
The powerful carbon dioxide smell triggered by the HMBPP molecule makes the infected blood irresistible to mosquitoes.
This is enough to change the mosquito's choice whether to take the normal blood or this blood, this molecule.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says malaria is transmitted to humans by the female Anopheles mosquito. Of about 430 Anopheles species, between 30 and 40 transmit malaria. And just like humans, mosquitoes tend to eat more food when it tastes good. In this case, a lot more. Fye says it's like an addiction.
We let them feed on different blood a longer period of time. If we let them just settle, sit down, start to feed, and looked at their persistence to feed, it was a huge difference as well. So the molecule itself also has a sort of appetizing effect on the feeding.
Fye says mosquitoes eating a larger meal of infected blood allows more plasmodium parasites to be produced within the mosquito. And it's all because of the HMBPP molecule.
If you mix this molecule with blood that has parasites and compare it with the blood without the molecule, you can have 5 times more parasitically infected mosquitoes, and the parasitic load also raises really high.
Fye describes it as a well-functioning system developed over millions of years. She says it means the malaria parasite can survive and spread to more people without killing the hosts. Developing new drugs to reduce the amount of HMBPP produced by malaria parasites would not stop mosquitoes from finding infected blood. Even a tiny amount triggers the smell response.
If you stop them from producing it, if you can do that, then it would be a perfect drug. And people are looking for such drugs. So far, we haven't seen anything. But in our case, we can at least attract the mosquitoes into traps and kill them. And lowering the number of mosquitoes is really one very important way of diminishing the number of diseased people.
Chemical-infused bed nets and insecticides are the most widely used methods of controlling mosquitoes. Vaccine research also continues. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
From Washington, we move back to Juba, where South Sudanese civil servants say they are acquiring new skills from colleagues in neighboring IGAD countries. A group of civil servants has arrived in South Sudan under the United Nations Development Programme Service Support Officers Regional Initiative, which pairs civil servants with South Sudanese government employees so they can receive some on-the-job training. Mungume Davis Rakarinj has more for VOA from Juba.
Juma Yohana Kebi, Undersecretary in the Ministry of Labour and Public Service, says South Sudanese civil servants have attained many important job skills from Kenyan, Ugandan and Ethiopian civil workers since the mentorship program began in 2011. Speaking at today's induction workshop, Yohana Kebi says more than 1,000 civil servants in different departments have been trained in different fields.
We got support in drafting and review of 19 bills and regulations on conduct of business, out of which 4 were enacted by the National Legislative Assembly. Formulation of protocols, standard operating procedures, curricula, terms of reference, guidelines, and manuals. We also had the experience of support to the restructuring and harmonization of government ministries and institutions. Promotion of best practices, especially in the health sector, including the introduction of infection control procedures in 15 hospitals across South Sudan.
Justin Jada Joseph, who works the South Sudan Minister of Labor as a communications officer, says he learned how to develop a strategic plan and good customer service manners from his Kenyan mentor.
People behave not in a way that the office needs. So you can bring back home your own thinking to the office. So these are some of the things that we also learn how you can attain to the, your clients that come to you. And it has created really a conducive environment, a conducive working environment for both the officials and the clients that come to the institutions.
Simon Angote, Director for Human Resources Development at Kenya's Ministry of Public Service, says IGAD member countries also are learning a thing or two from their South Sudanese counterparts.
When they come back to our country, we actually use them as reference persons. They will tell us about the experience they've had. So it's a two-way learning process that you're learning from people in this country, as at the same time they also learn from you what practices are acceptable in the workplace.
Angote says the initiative also promotes bilateral relations among countries. He says, as members of IGAD, East Africans have a moral obligation to train their South Sudanese colleagues. Kristen Opile, a human resources manager from Kenya, agrees.
We are all our brother's keeper. So when I am giving you, or rather when we are holding hands together and achieving something, we are all moving forward. So when, as a Kenyan, I'm working together with a Ugandan, Ethiopian, or a South Sudanese, then I'm achieving my goal, which is development economically, socially, politically.
South Sudanese officials say their goal is to build a professional, accountable, and impartial public service, something IGAD member countries have been helping them to achieve. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Anataban by a group of South Sudanese musicians.
جنوبين كل يوم موت موت لمتين يا اخوانا نقول سلام سلام متين السلام ده يجي يلدونا في هروب ونربي في هروب وكمان نموت في هروب لكل جنوبي يموت قطعة من جنوبنا بيموت نجري لمتين ولوين ندي يالنا وندي ارواحنا وندي دمنا فضل شنو تاني انا تعبان
انا ما شابان لكن انا بستابان انا ما فرحان لكن انا بستابان انا ما سكران لكن انا بستابان انا ما كسران لكن انا بستابان
Wahedo salama through the kuma kumya vijinukda Silai kun haja muadini maishufya Binia bonjour java habuba hajad mabepa vijinukda Gabriya jua unzuriya jua karihiya jua gaba kabir jua fazad jua Nyakama hajata nan jua Dididididu dududududu uya Zot vajo bijida baba zazuka Jerry jerry lebitan junubin gaidi Kampala, Nairobi, UN, America, Australia, Spain, Aruba, Nigeria, Junubi, Dile, Belatana, Dala, no wisdom. Why sound the gun? Redundant, like a head dunk. I'm feeling so tired. Anataban.
Anataban means jere jere. Salgamala wata, salgamala wata. Usa wata kabat na jian, anataban. Bashak el karabu bele, tali nur biya bapele.
Mot wot kulu yom, si telefon, junuk tani na karabu, ni na malu. Dom kubu, aku ya wakatulu, anataban, anataban, fishuno.
Alamu wati, junubi besi.
We have been listening to South Sudanese musicians with the song Anataban. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.